One of my favorite scenes from the movies is where a city doctor gets stuck in this small rural town, and he does some damage, and to repay it, he's forced to see the patients, the citizens of this little town, free of charge. And a cute old lady walks into his office one day, and she complains that there's a blurry spot in her vision. She says, it's there. No, it's there. No, now it's there. So he reaches across the desk, and he takes her glasses and grabs a tissue, wipes them clean, and puts them back on her face. She sits back and smiles and says, I'm cured. Now, if this had happened in a hospital emergency room, she would have been billed $400 for the doctor's time. And the doctors are telling me, no, more, more. And probably $55 for the tissue. Now, maybe I'm exaggerating, but if I am, it's not by much. Everyone recognizes that we're facing a healthcare crisis in the United States today. Health insurance premiums are so expensive that they are beyond the reach of many people, not just the poorest people in our country. And the rates are only going up. They've doubled in the past decade, rising four times faster than wages. And according to one of the Medicare trustees, the Medicare Trust Fund will be insolvent within 8 years. Now, our government is currently debating healthcare legislation, which will hopefully get us out of this mess. Now, I'm not here to advocate for any one of the particular plans, but I want to share with you some general insights from Jewish tradition about healthcare. Now, to boil down the debate in this country to its simplest terms, and I hate to do this, but on a certain simple level, the debate really is more about money. It's about paying for healthcare rather than the actual delivery of healthcare. So how much is your health actually worth? If, God forbid, you get some terrible disease and your doctor tells you that you have 6 months left to live, but there is this very rare and expensive drug that he can give you that would extend your life by an additional 6 months, would you pay for it if it cost $10,000? Probably. What if it were $100,000? Or $1 million? Or $100 million? If you're not willing to pay any amount of money, no matter how exorbitant, for even the smallest amount of extra time on this earth, then in principle you don't believe that life and health are of infinite value. If at any point you decide to say, you know what, 6 more months is not worth that much money, then you believe that there are equal or things that are of greater value than life and health. And you believe in rationing health care so that you can afford other things of value. The debate is really about how much to spend and who's going to pay for it. Now, we all care about our lives and our health very much, but we still do risky things. We eat junk food, and we eat too much of it. We drive on the freeways here in LA. If we really cared about our lives so much, we'd all stay home. All right, so we have to earn a living. So guess what? The speed limit now all over the country will be 10 miles an hour, and everyone's going to drive a tank. No more fatalities on our roads anymore, and we're going to double the budget of the Department of Transportation. But we're willing to take risks, to live life as we see fit, as long as we feel safe. And that means that we believe that our actions don't adversely affect others too much, and their actions don't adversely affect us too much. Now think back on my example. Let's say the treatment to extend your life by 6 months costs $100,000, something you could afford if you had to sell your home. But you're lucky. Your insurance covers the treatment. You don't have to make that difficult decision. You decide to take the treatment, and you think that there's no negative consequences to that decision. You think that. But you're taking that treatment raises the insurance premiums of everyone in your group. And now there are certain few people in your group who can no longer afford their health insurance. They no longer now can see a doctor for preventative care. If they want to see someone, they have to go to the emergency room. And God forbid they get a terrible illness, they're going to be bankrupt. Would you still take the treatment knowing that? If you were just a person in this insurance group, would you want that treatment available for somebody else, knowing what it would do to your insurance premiums? Because there's always hidden costs in healthcare. We all know the age-old saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Yet we don't give everyone in this country access to preventative care. Instead, we give everyone access to emergency care. Anyone can walk into an emergency room and receive treatment. They're not allowed to refuse. We're willing to pay for the pound, but we're not willing to pay for the ounce. And it really is us who pays. It's not through our insurance, but through our tax money that keeps the public emergency rooms open. Now, in the U.S., we spend more per capita on healthcare than any other country in the world. We spend more money on healthcare as a percentage of our gross domestic product than any other country in the world, and those numbers are only increasing. But for all that money that we're spending, we're not by far the healthiest country in the world on average. The U.S. actually ranks 45th in life expectancy amongst countries. We're behind countries like Jordan, where they spend on average $200 per person per year on health care, and they have a higher life expectancy on average than us, and we're spending over $5,000 per person per year. We rank 44th in infant mortality amongst countries in the world. So what does Jewish tradition have to say about all of this? And I want to look at these Jewish sources which will help us see the complexity of this debate. And the Jewish sources don't necessarily have an opinion about the specifics of the bills being debated in Congress, but they do have opinions about the delivery of and the payment for health care in general. And as I mentioned, I'm not here to opine on the specific legislation, but to help us see how Jewish tradition would look at this debate and actually how it makes it that much more complicated. Now, in Jewish tradition, God is the ultimate source of all healing. But God has given permission to physicians to heal, and every single Jew has an obligation to save another person's life. That's from the verse in Leviticus, Lo ta'amod al dam re'echa, do not stand idly by while your neighbor's blood is being spilled. And the rabbis interpret this verse to mean that you have an obligation directly to save a person's life if you are able. If someone has a heart attack, God forbid, you have to perform CPR. And if you don't know how to do it, then you have to find someone who does. And if you find someone and they're unwilling, you have to pay them to do it. That's the extent of your obligation. So wonderful. We have to help people. We know that. There's no debate about that. But what about the nitty-gritty? Who's going to pay for it? So in Jewish tradition, the cost of delivering health care is actually a shared responsibility between four parties, between the patient's family, the doctor, and the community. The individual and familial responsibility to pay comes from these laws that we have in Jewish tradition about redeeming captives. It was assumed that if somebody was kidnapped and put in captivity, that their life and their health was at risk. And of course, it was assumed that the person would want to be freed and redeemed. And they would have to pay for it out of their own assets. And if they did not have enough assets to pay for their own redemption, then it would fall to their family to pay, again, assuming that their family would want them redeemed. According to halacha, according to Jewish law, unless the government or the local community is providing care for everyone equally or for a specific class of people all equally, then individuals who can pay for health care bear the primary responsibility to pay for it. Now, we all might agree on that the responsibility falls on the individual patient. We may even all agree that it would extend to their family. But why put the responsibility on the doctor? And why on the community? Medical knowledge and the ability to heal were considered such fundamental elements to life that in Jewish tradition, the rabbis didn't believe that they could be bought and sold just like any other commodity. The Shulchan Aruch, the great 16th century code of laws, ruled that a physician is forbidden to take payment for his wisdom and his learning. He is allowed to receive a payment, though, for his trouble and for his lost time. For centuries in Jewish communities, anyone who could pay for their treatment did, but Jewish doctors always gave free services to the poor. This dates back even to the Talmud. 1,500 years ago, we read the story of Abba, who was a bleeder, which was the way that they dominantly performed medicine at that time. And he would leave a box outside his office where people could deposit payments so that if someone couldn't pay, they weren't embarrassed. They could simply walk out of the office and no one knew if they deposited any money in the box or not. And if he saw that the person was indigent, he would actually give them money and say, go strengthen yourself following the procedure. Isaac Israeli, who was a 10th century Moroccan physician who wrote medical texts which were used for centuries all over the world, adjured doctors to, quote, be especially concerned with visiting and treating the poor and needy sick, for you cannot assume a more rewarding work. So the burden of treating the sick who cannot afford to pay also fell partially to the doctors. They had to absorb some of the cost. They were still allowed to charge the fees to those who could pay, and in fact, the Talmud states that a physician who charges nothing is worth nothing, but the poor should have access to care even if they can't afford it. But where does this communal responsibility come from? Well, it comes simply from the laws of tzedakah. We're all required to give tzedakah. In fact, even someone who receives tzedakah is required to give back something to the community. And part of what we give to tzedakah is supposed to go to pay for the health care of those who can afford it. In rationing and dividing up the communal tzedakah fund, the Shulchan Aruch ruled that charity first goes to pay for the care of the poor who are sick, who cannot care for themselves, before it gets given to anything else. It's kind of like our taxes today, which go to pay for Medicare and Medicaid and to keep those emergency rooms open. This, though, isn't the end of the story, because Jewish law recognizes that not all healthcare is the same. Sometimes we get sick through no fault of our own. A poor person who gets hit by a car who's legally crossing the street should be treated without question as to their ability to pay. But what about someone who smokes? Do we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars for a poor person who smoked and now has developed lung cancer and needs a lung transplant? Jewish law does recognize personal responsibility in the maintenance of one's health. Today we would say that Jewish law requires that we're responsible not to smoke, not to abuse alcohol or drugs, to eat healthy foods, to get regular exercise. But Jewish law is also not uncompassionate to those who fall victim to disease or injury, even through their own actions. The halacha states that we help someone once, twice, but by the third time we don't pay for the care of their ailments that are related to personal choices, unless it's a matter of immediate life and death. We always save a life. We even give people second chances, but our obligation to those who are ill from their own actions is not infinite. But that still doesn't necessarily answer our question about this poor person who smoked. Maybe this is the first time they're presenting with an illness, and they've committed, they're not going to smoke again. Does the community still have to pay for this very expensive operation? Now, according to halacha, the person shouldn't have been smoking in the first place. But individuals are required by halacha to seek treatment when they are ill. And if they can't afford the treatment, they're supposed to make use of public assistance. So the smoker broke one halacha and they ended up following another. Well, Jewish tradition has ruled that the community can decide that certain medical expenses are so expensive that they can be rationed by the community. Communal funds don't need to be spent for every single kind of treatment. And if the person wants it, then they would have to pay for it on their own, which means that for the poor, certain treatments would be unavailable. And this is where things get tricky. Because at what point do we decide as a community that something is too expensive? I asked you in the beginning, how much would you pay for a treatment to extend your life for 6 months? There is some cutoff point in your head. But what is it? And can we all agree on a figure? And what makes this so difficult is that in Jewish tradition, we've often taken the position which is known as the vitalist approach. We try to extend life whenever possible. If a person is terminally ill with cancer, but their life can be extended by chemotherapy, there are some rabbis who would say that you should take the chemotherapy and extend your life, even if it's just for a short amount of time, and even though the chemotherapy, the side effects are worse than the progression of the disease. Now, not all rabbis would say this, but there are some who would. And it stems from a belief that life is of infinite value. Even a life of suffering, they argue, is better than no life at all. Traditionally, Judaism has never had a concept of quality of life. So there really was no debate about that concept. And this is primarily because only until very recently have we been able to extend people's lives for a significant amount of time without being able to cure them. Now, I'm oversimplifying this issue because I don't have an hour to go into the different Jewish views on end-of-life care. But only really very recently, within the past 10 years, have rabbis and other Jewish bioethicists struggled with this question of quality of life. Is there such a concept of quality of life in Judaism? And if there is, what defines quality? We may feel comfortable saying a terminally ill patient with cancer with 3 months left to live can forego the chemotherapy, which will only extend their life by a few weeks. But can parents decide that for their teenager who has a terrible genetic disease, they should forego a life-saving heart operation, which will extend their life for a number of years, because in general, their life doesn't have a high quality? Now, this debate is relevant to the debate around healthcare because the majority of money that we spend here in the United States on healthcare is spent in the last year of someone's life. And the majority of that is spent in the last few months and even just the last few weeks of life. It's like everyone in the United States has philosophically taken this approach to be a vitalist. But if we continue to allow this, then we end up in the place where we are, where our system is almost bankrupt. We either have to be willing to spend a lot more money on healthcare, more than we already are, which is 15% of our entire economy, and we've seen that in general, spending more doesn't make us healthier in general. Or we need to ration healthcare and spend it in a different way. And again, the danger of rationing healthcare is that we're simply putting a price tag on life. Your extra 6 months are worth $50,000. That's the standard in the United Kingdom for their health insurance. And if the treatment to extend your life costs more than that, they won't pay for it. And if you want it, you have to pay for it on your own. What will it do to our psyche? And what will it do to our society when we start putting a price tag on life? Are we going to start requiring abortions for children with terrible deformities because the lifetime cost of their care is worth more than their lives? This is what makes the healthcare debate so complex. It's not simply just about whether we should have private insurance versus universal coverage. Those are different ways of tackling the same issue. But the fundamental debate still exists. Who pays and how much? How much is your life worth? Shabbat shalom.